Hello everyone and welcome back to Fame Show Chat. It's number 904 and we're at the beginning of August in 2026. And I'm here as usual with Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello there. I can't believe it's nearly been a year.
Yeah, I was just noting in the recording notes that you and I have been doing this for a year. We started with Phone Show Chat 866, which was in August last year when Steve stepped down. And I think that we've done 38 shows, the two of us now. And yeah, it's a year on the calendar. How about that, eh?
They say very time flies good when you're having fun. Don't they?
Indeed, yeah. 38 shows in a year. So today we're joined by a new guest on the show, Zain Shahid. Hello, Zain.
Hello, Ted and Joe. I hope you guys are well.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. I hope you are too. And you're very welcome to join us for the show. First timer on it. And we'll be very keen to hear what sort of stuff you've been using and what you hope to use and what you like using and what you don't like using. And we'll get straight to that in a couple of minutes. But first of all, just to mention that our website is at phoneshowchat.uk. That's the two S's in the middle of that. So don't forget that. And we're in Podhub UK, of course. And if you get lost with anything of that, you can find it all at tedsalmon.com. Links to MeWe groups and links to all of our other audio podcasts as well, of which there are plenty and I'm sure you're sick of. Zain, let's get straight to you and ask you to launch into whatever you want to talk about, really. We've got no time constraints particularly, and you can take as little or as much time as you want to talk about anything you want to bring to the show. Perhaps you could start by telling us whereabouts you live and what you do for a living, roughly how old you are, that sort of thing.
Yes, so I'm Zain. I'm 33 years of age and I live in the state of Qatar in the Middle East, but I originally belong from Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And I'm working in the health industry as a GP here in Qatar.
Right.
So, yes, I've been following the show since day one. I've always been a fan of you and Steve. Mm-hmm. I think I've started following you guys since my late teenage years. I started by watching his video shows on YouTube, and I remember listening to the very first episode of your podcast, and I've never missed a show.
Well done. You can be number one fan then.
I hope so.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And so tell us a bit about your kind of path through devices you've used and what you're favoring and what you used to favor and what maybe you're looking forward to. Just anything you want to talk about, really.
Yes, so my smartphone journey started with the Nokia N series. The Nokia N70 was my first smartphone. I remember very clearly. It was a fantastic piece of kit. It was my first time using a Symbian phone. I remember it having no Wi-Fi or any modern bells and whistles, but it was very good for its time. Had a great camera as well. And then I went on to the Nokia N82, the one with the Xenon flash. I remember passionately reading Steve's articles on it, on All About Symbian. And I was a huge fan of it. Kept that phone for quite a long time. I think I kept it for like 4 or 5 years. I had a replacement battery going on for it. And it was a fantastic phone. It was. I took some great shots with it. It had the same 5-megapixel camera as the N95. But paired with the Xenon flash, I could freeze photos in time, as Steve used to mention.
The thing I remember about the N82, Zain, is that I'm looking at the picture of it now, and the buttons on it for the T9 were just tiny, even by T9 standards. I found them really, really hard to use.
Oh, yes, they were very, very uncomfortable. not a pleasure to type on. But I think the rest of the phone was very, very good. The speakers were great. And I mean, we had the protective camera covering as well, which is missing these days. But I really miss those features. And then I moved on to I kept that phone for quite a while, and then I went into a dilemma, because at the time there was the iPhone and Android had just started showing up with its devices. And I didn't want to leave the world of Nokia because I was a big Nokia fan. And I had to move on to my medical school, my university, and I was left in a dilemma. What do I do? I need to upgrade my phone. And I finally went to the shop to buy the Galaxy S2, I remember very clearly. And amazingly enough, I walked out with a Nokia N9. And it was love at first sight. I knew that it was a Migo OS, which was Linux-based Nokia's experimentation. Yeah. And I had used Nokia's N900 device briefly in the past, and I was a big fan of the MIMO OS it had. But the N9 was a whole different story. It was beautifully made and designed. I'm sure you remember the polycarbonate body and the smooth curved screen, and it was an absolute beauty.
it was a delight, you're right. And it was made of this stuff that just went all the way through, so if you scratched it or anything, it didn't matter, because it was the same underneath, wasn't it?
Yes, it was the same underneath, and I just picked it out of love, and I very quickly realized in the first 6 months that it was not a practical phone, because there was virtually no app store. I could not use any study groups. I could not communicate with my friends very fluently. I could not put my offline media in it because a lot of video codecs were not supported. There was no support for third-party apps. It was all fun, but when it came to real practicality, being a university student, I could not really use it to its full potential. So I eventually had to sell it off. And then I started my journey with Android. I got the first Galaxy Note, the Galaxy Note 1, which was a gigantic device back in its day.
The Samsung Galaxy Note 1.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know that I ever had one of those. Tell us about that.
It was basically a Galaxy S2, but bigger and with the same chipset and a higher resolution display. The Galaxy S2 was at about 4.3-inch screen, so it was very large for the time. The Note 1 had a 5.3-inch screen, so it was a 1280 into 800 pixels, 5.3-inch screen AMOLED, and it was considered quite large for the time. It was the phone that was called a phablet. So that was the term phablet that came around. And it was a lovely tool. As a university student, I really loved it. It had built in, that was the first one with the S Pen support and everything. And I used to take notes on it. It came with Android Gingerbread. That was 2.3, I guess. Mm-hmm. And had a big Android ICS update. It was 4.0, I think. And I used it for a couple of years, and then I started installing custom ROMs on it. Back in the day, there was CyanogenMod and others, and I bricked it eventually.
I'm just looking at a photograph of it now, and I do remember it. I'm not sure that I had one. I think I got in on the Note series when it was the fourth one. I'm not quite sure why, but I don't think I had one before the Note 4. But yeah, you obviously had them right from the start.
Yes, I had a good time with it. And then for a brief while, I did move on to using an iPhone. So I went from a very big phone to a very small phone. I remember going for the iPhone 5S. It was a very beautifully made and crafted phone. It was my first time using an iOS device, and I really liked it, but it was very limiting at the time. And I could not use it more than 6 months. So I went back to Android, and I went with the Note 5, which was another beautiful phone, and I had it for like almost a couple of years or so before the screen got damaged. Although I'm very careful with my phones, but it was an unfortunate accident. The phone had a crack on the screen, and there were green line issues. So And then after that, I went on to the Note 9. And that was the turning point for me, because from that point onwards, I had started having issues with Samsung software, the lag, the camera problems, and overheating, mostly overheating. And I never had those problems before with Samsung devices. I was okay with the TouchWiz UI, which they called it. But since the Note 9, I experienced very bad battery drain and software hangups and a lot of duplication of apps. And I had to give Samsung up.
That was the Note 9 that, oh no, it wasn't. I was going to say the one that Steve was raving about for a number of years, but it wasn't. I think that was the S9. So it was the non-Note version of this, I suppose, yeah.
Yes, the S9 and S8 were pretty stable phones and very popular here in Asia as well. They came in two sizes, the Plus and Non-Plus, and they were very good for their time. The Note 9, on the other hand, was supposed to be a good phone on the paper, but I don't know, maybe my unit was a faulty one, but I had very bad battery drain with it, and it used to overheat a lot. So that was the first time I switched phones, and I went on to using a Poco phone.
So, oh, right. Okay.
Yes. I decided to give budget phones a try. I was running into a bit of a financial crisis. So I said, okay, fine. I will keep a budget phone. Let me see how budget phones are. And the first budget phone I had was the Poco X3. Now, this was a phone back in the COVID times. And it was a very good phone. Surprisingly enough, Xiaomi did a brilliant job with it. It was very well optimized for its chipset. Ran on a Snapdragon 732G, so a fairly mid-range processor. Had decent amount of RAM for back in the day. It was 6 gigabytes, and had a very large battery of 5,300. And it was one of the first phones with 120 hertz displays. Although it was an LCD display, but it was a very smooth display. And I was pleasantly surprised that how well it performed for a very cheap phone.
Yeah, we've got, I think, isn't there Ed House that's still got one of these Poco X3s in action, Joe? I'm fairly sure he said that he's still got one going, because it helps his eyesight, because he has some issues with, what's it called? You're the honor man, the dithering. Dimming. Dimming, yeah.
Dimming. Is that what he has?
And he reckons that this phone does him well on that. So perhaps it's to do with that LCD, is it, Zane?
Yes. I still have one functioning. It still works very well for me. Mm-hmm. And the battery is obviously not as good as it used to be, but it still works well. It's on Android 11 or 12, I believe. And it's on MIUI instead of HyperOS, because it could not support HyperOS. It still works. Yeah, it still works well with in the house. I use it sometimes as a hotspot or a podcast player.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, even if you lost some battery, it's had 6,000 mAh battery, so it's still got plenty of battery there, even if you lose some.
Yes, I put it on 60 hertz instead of 120, and I've gained some battery back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of phone for your money, definitely. Mm-hmm. Good choice.
Yes, I did give the ROG phone to a tribe back in the Poco days. Ooh. I saved up some money for the ROG phone. I was very fascinated by the hardware, and I ordered one specially from Singapore, and it came, and it was really, really pleasant. It was the first phone with 120 hertz display and a huge battery, two USB type C ports, one on the side, one at the bottom, and it had a very fancy design. And very, very loud stereo speakers as well. So I really loved that phone. And
I'm looking at the specs of that now, and it's 6.59 inches, which makes it smaller than the usual kind of 6.7, 6.9, 8-inch screens we're used to now. But at the time, I remember the ROG gaming phones, we just thought they were massive, didn't we?
Was this the first one that had that dual charging? You mentioned the two ports. Was this the first one that did that?
There was an ROG Phone 1, It was significantly smaller than this, and it had dual charging as well. So
there was one of them that had one port didn't charge and one did. One was just for data and one was for charging. Was that wasn't this one?
No, you could charge this with both. The idea was that if you were gaming while charging, so you could prop the charger up sideways and the wire wouldn't hinder your thumbs or your fingers. So yeah, that was the idea. Mm-hmm. But and later on, they added in the ROG Phone 3 and 5, they added bypass charging. So you could play games or stream video without using the phone's battery. So it would use the wall. Yeah, it would use the wall's power, the charging plug's power instead of your phone's battery without it being degraded. So that was a very smart move by them, actually.
Yeah, Sony did the similar, didn't they?
And did this get you into gaming at all?
Not really, because at the time, Android emulation was still very far behind. I did try and emulate some PlayStation 1 games. They did work fine, but there were a lot of fiddling required, and they were very finicky with the controls, and the phone would overheat a lot. It did not have any kind of proper cooling. There was a vapor chamber, but it wasn't really like how the gaming phones are now today, which I'll come to later on. Okay. So I just used it as a souvenir, actually. It stayed in my drawer for quite a while, and then it ran. I think it just died last year. It had motherboard failures and it just shut itself down. So I still have it here, but it doesn't turn on.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
It's got the fancy light at the back as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was a. It was a fancy ROG logo light. You could customize it into any form. It was an RGB, proper RGB light. So you could, in fact, it had more colors than an RGB. It had like 7 or 8 colors. So you could use it as a notification light. It had its own notification light in the front, but you could customize it even further. So it was a nice hardware.
And shoulder buttons?
Shoulder trigger, pressure sensitive buttons, yes. Exactly the physical ones, but they were like pressure sensitive capacitive buttons, you could say. Yeah.
Very cool.
I remember actually, Ted, even you had one of those.
Well, I got a feeling, you know, I had one in for a really, really short time. I'm looking at the pictures of it now on GSM Arena, and I'm remembering that you could get peripherals for it, including what you were saying about the cooling fan, because you could buy a bolt-on cooling thingy.
Yes.
And there was something in that bolt-on cooling thingy that you could plug into, was it an HDMI or something? And you could put it out to a TV screen or a monitor.
Yes, exactly. It had a HDMI to TV dock like accessory, which enabled you to project your screen into a desktop like environment, but you could not access you could only access the game hub of it, like the gaming environment of it, not the other apps.
Right.
But there were workarounds to access the rest of the phone as well. So I never got around to having those, but it was pretty cool to see those.
Yeah, really nice phone.
I think the speakers were very good as well, weren't they? On that one.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they were probably why you got it.
I've got a feeling that someone loaned it to me, you know, and I begged and borrowed it from someone, and I could only have it for a couple of weeks or something, and it's gone in the distant memory somewhere. But yeah, it's all coming back to me now.
Yes. And then after a while of using the Poco phone, I decided to give Samsung a try again after a lot of years of staying away from Samsung. And now I'm currently using the S24 Ultra, which is my primary phone. And I do have a work phone, which is the iPhone 13. But the S24 Ultra is the one where my main SIM lives in. And I think I like it. I like it a lot.
Okay, I've got the S24 Plus here, not the Ultra, and I think it's, apart from the S Pen, I think it's pretty much as good, not quite as big. And I've got now One US 8.5 on it, waiting for One US 9. And it is a real tinkerer's playground, isn't it? You were saying that you come from a background of mucking about with ROMs and Cyanogen and stuff. And there's a real, with this Galaxy stuff, there's a real feel of that if you want to play about, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. The Goodlock option here is fantastic. It allows you to customize literally any aspect of the phone, whether it's the icons or the aspect ratio, or even the smallest of settings can be accessed through the Goodlock module. It's fantastic.
The one I'm waiting for with One UI 9 is the one that lets you put a background behind the dock, which you can do in Octopi Launcher, which I really like. And you can, it allows you to, it's going to be in Home Up, in the Home Up module. You can put a kind of, you know, a background to the dock, a little panel that the dock sits on. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I saw a rumor about that, and I hope we get more options like those in the upcoming One UI update.
Definitely. How are you finding the battery on the S24 Ultra?
It's a pretty stable battery. It gets me through the day quite easily. The charging, I hope, could have been faster, but it does the job. It's not very excellent. It's not bad either. So I would say it's above average. And I've been having it for over a year now, so it's held up pretty well. I've put the battery protection feature, I've enabled it, so it charges up to 90%.
Right.
And it gets me through a 16, 17-hour day quite easily.
Very good. Well done. And you haven't damaged the screen like Joe might.
Here in Asia, we have a trend of putting the screen protector as soon as we get the phone.
Right.
Yeah, I tend to usually. I've got the S24 Ultra as my work phone, funny enough. It's a really, really good phone. I enjoy it. Do you use the S Pen much, Zane?
I do sometimes to jot down some quick notes when I'm studying or to take down some quick, maybe a grocery list or something recommended by the wife. So I use one sometimes.
The last one with Bluetooth capability, that was.
Yes. This was the last S Ultra phone with all the features were intact. Since the S25 Ultra, they've started ripping off features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a shame. It is a bit of a shame. But on the other hand, I have to say that when I've had devices with pens, I think we might have spoken about this on the last show, I just never used it. And yes, you're right, Zane. If you quickly want to make a note of a shopping list or something, fair enough. But I don't know. I'm figuring that Samsung's research and monitoring of their users, maybe they've concluded the same thing and they're wheedling away and removing it. Although there is word that it might be coming back in its full glory in the S27, I'm led to believe. Have you heard that?
Well, I've heard rumors of them not bothering much with the S Pen. And I've heard rumors that they might increase the battery size of the S27 Ultra finally. So it's rumored to have a 5500 mAh battery, which is which will be great because we've been stuck with the same 5000 milliampere cell for the past 5 or 6 years now. So it's high time they finally upgraded the battery. It's a solid phone all around. The series have been very solid, but as Miriam Jawar on her podcast, she often mentions it that the Ultra phones from Samsung nowadays are not quite Ultra. They're more like Pro phones now compared to what the Chinese have to offer. So, yes.
Yeah, they take some matching often, don't they? As Joe reminds us with his Honor cap on, and that it really is quite impressive how they push the boundaries.
So even Honor, I'd like them to do, I reckon they could do a more Ultra phone than what they give even. When you see that likes the Vivo and Oppo Ultras, they're really impressive.
Yeah. So Apple iPhone 13, which is aging a little bit now. That's your work phone, you say?
Yes, that's my work phone. I use it as a secondary phone as well to keep updated with iOS and its new features and updates and what's happening in that camp. To be honest, I'm not quite a fan of iOS like you guys, but I do find it more appealing on the iPad.
No, 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 not like us guys.
No, no.
We're not at all. We're with you on that. But we do like to try and cover it when a guest comes on and is using one. So do feel free to say anything you like about it.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, you can't ignore Apple, can you? It'd be silly.
Yes, there are certain aspects of iOS which are superior to Android. Like, for example, the support for third-party apps is quite... the quality of apps on iOS is definitely on the higher side, especially the social media apps like Instagram, Snapchat. All these apps tend to have a slightly higher polish to them. And even the content displayed in apps like Instagram, the videos look much higher quality. So even on my Ultra phone here, if I try to scroll between the reels, I can see the bit of chopping and I see lack of HDR effect. On the on a 5-year-old iPhone, I can still see the video much smoother and the apps being more optimized. So that's one area where iOS, I would say, still is a bit ahead. But when it comes to managing notifications, PIM, and when it comes to multitasking and just general basic stuff, I think there is where iOS lacks, and especially while navigation. I'm still baffled that that Apple haven't figured out a way to sort out the back button. It is such a hassle. You have to swipe from one side, and some apps have it within themselves. Some apps, it can get very confusing very quickly.
Yeah. I agree. That's my thing. That's the main thing that puts me off iOS. So yeah, I'm with you.
But I think you're right about the quality of the apps, and this is one of the things that Apple users come back to, and quite rightly, I think, say that they're very polished, and they always have been. And I remember when back in the day when I had an iPad for a while, and I was just bowled over back in the this is probably about, I don't know, 15 years ago, but I was trying hard to use Android stuff. And but when I picked up my iPad and just played some games even, it was just streets ahead. It was so nicely done, and you could just see why, what the attraction was and how the developers had worked really hard to make it all, and Apple, to make it all a really, really nice experience. You can see why it was so attractive.
On that note, Ted, I felt that Android tablets were dead at one point because iPads were just dominating, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. But I think I think they've also come on, Zane. I think that the Android world have realized this, and when you pick up a modern Android tablet and load some Android games on it, I think that they've realized and they've caught up to some degree and made it happen. I think one of the areas where it's still a bit different maybe is with some of those creator apps, like, you know, like you do, Joe, with editing video, that and GarageBand and those kind of media centric things where people still want to use Apple stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, I think because a lot of content creators do have Apple devices as well, because the video capability, and then match that with the software that you can get. Yeah, it's well optimized. They're starting to do a bit more. Like Samsung has partnerships with LumaFusion and stuff like that now. So you are seeing it getting better on the Android side. But yeah, I think Apple probably are still ahead there.
A lot of it comes back to, I suppose, the age-old fact that Apple have got a locked system, and they've only got so many devices that they've got to get it right for. And poor old Android, they've got to get it right for about 1,000,001 devices made by 1,001 OEMs and manufacturers of phones and tablets and you know, computers and the whole lot. And Apple have got it a bit, well, not easier, but just a bit more in a controlled environment, I think is the word. But anyway, so you don't really use it much for outside of work stuff, Zane?
Yes, it's mostly is used mostly within the premises of the work, and I use it occasionally from time to time, maybe to transfer stuff here and there, or maybe just to catch up with my family's location, because yes, the Apple services are very cohesive and they do work well when you have another family member who has an iPhone. So that you can, I mean, I don't have any other Apple accessories, so I guess I'm missing out. But I feel more comfortable with Android since day one. So I've always felt more easy with Android. So yes, that's, and those annoyances I mentioned, they are really a part of my day-to-day routine. So I couldn't use an iPhone if I wanted to. But the iPad, on the other hand, is a whole different story. It's the OS on the iPad has evolved to a better extent, which I use daily. So although this is a phone show, so I won't go more deep into that. But iPad OS has evolved very beautifully well. But I think iOS still needs work and is still far behind for me.
I do notice that when I go to some medical facilities, like, for example, my dentist, they give me an iPad to fill in my details on. And I was with my dad at a hospital, and a private hospital, or a clinic rather, and out comes the iPad. And it seems like a lot of professional, maybe medical only, or maybe lots of other things, they're just generating towards the iPad and using iPads. Or maybe that's just the medical facilities, and perhaps that's not true if you went to somewhere like, I don't know, engineering or a building environment. You work in the medical field. Would you say that was something that is true?
Yes, that is true, because there's a lot of support for third-party medical apps on iOS and iPadOS, and a lot of guide material, a lot of apps that were specifically designed for doctors and engineers. Developers took more keen interest in designing those apps for iOS. And it's also part of the reason is why is because developers get paid more when they develop apps for iOS and iPadOS, rather than, I think they have a higher incentive fee as well. So that adds to it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay then. Right. Where should we go next? You got up to the S24 Ultra and the iPhone 13.
Yes. So that's my current setup. I am looking at a bunch of foldables right now, and I would love to upgrade to a foldable, because that would ideally help me replace my phone and my iPad. And I wouldn't replace my iPad though, but it would really open a new gateway for me in terms of form factor, because I've always been a fan of flexible form factors. My wife uses a Flip 5, so even though I'm not a fan of the flip concept, but I love the book style foldable. Mm-hmm. And with the release of the new Fold 8 with its shorter, wider aspect ratio, I really like it.
You're not alone. Yeah. Are you going to get one?
I might get one. I might wait in for some good trade-in deals, and I might wait for the prices to come down, because Samsung prices here in the Middle East and Asia, generally, they come down very quickly. Like say after the release of 4 or 5 months, you see a drastic downfall in price. So I might wait till maybe Christmas time, maybe December, to see what's happening.
Smart, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, have you had hands-on with the original generation Pixel Fold or any of the, the Huawei? I suppose you're unlikely to have gone with Huawei because of the Google stuff, but something else that is in that kind of passport form factor?
As a matter of fact, I've only laid my hands on one Pixel ever, because Pixels don't sell here officially, and they come through third-party retailers. So I've only had the chance to play with the Pixel 5, which I got for my mom. And as far as the foldables are concerned, I had my hands on the first Huawei foldables when they started coming out. They were the outies, where the screen would fold outwards instead of inwards, and I did find them very impressive. But they were very fragile. They were very, very fragile.
Yeah, well, you're very lucky to have got hands-on with those, because we didn't, and we could import them, I suppose. Did you ever, Joe?
No, I would love to have, but I didn't get any pleasure of getting hands-on with them.
Some of them were really interesting. So your experience with this, it'll be really interesting if you get one for you to come back on the show and tell us about what you find and if you like it or not. It does seem to be dividing opinion when you look at reviews on YouTube, for example, where some people are. There's a couple of YouTubers that I follow that were really raving about it on day one. And then a couple of weeks later, they were kind of thinking, well, I'm not quite so sure anymore. And that focusing in on cameras, which are not so good, and also the speakers, which they've just done wrong. Everyone is saying that to not make the most of the stereo. So I think
Steve was saying that, wasn't he? Yeah,
we've always said that, really, about the fact that, you know, the Surface Duo does that right, and the original generation Pixel Fold does that right, and Samsung have just done it wrong, or at least everyone seems to think so. I suppose Samsung must know what they're doing, and it's just dividing opinion is all. So, yes, I hope you get one, Zane, and tell us all about it.
Yes, I do agree on the speaker front and the camera front, because placing them on the same side when it's unfolded doesn't make any sense, because it was made to watch movies and shows, and it the lopsidedness of the speakers really puts it in a weird category. And also the fact that they're still using the same crappy 3x telephoto 10 megapixel, I think it is, sensor from the S21 Ultra days. So I'm very surprised at that. They could have gone with the much more potent 5x one, but I don't know what decision led to that. I think I'm talking about the Ultra here. So I don't know why they keep using the same sensor for the past 4 or 5 years. It's annoying to see. It's a very small sensor. It's a 3.9-inch sensor. It's crappy.
Yeah, it's really poor, especially for an ultra-branded phone. Very poor.
Yes.
Are you going to get one in, Joe, an ultra?
No. The V6 is on my radar from
but, but you, but as a work phone, you've still got the 24 Ultra, haven't you?
Yeah. So
won't they get you updated on that?
No, I wish. When the S24 Ultra came up, I was really happy, and I told a few other colleagues. I said, that's on the list. They went to get it, and there was none left. So I did well getting that. Because before that, I had the 13 Pro Max. We tend to have like a few generations older. Sadly.
So, Zane, are you concerned about foldables in terms of vulnerability, screen, robustness and not ruggedness?
I have to say they've come a long way since the first foldable. I remember watching videos of the first foldable and how fragile it was, and reviewers having issues on day one. I think with the 8th generation now, and even with Honor doing some incredible stuff with their V series, Magic series, I think they've done a great job with these hinges and the screen protection and the layering of everything. Even despite them being thinner now, I've had my hands on with the Fold 6 and the Fold 7, and I found those hinges to be very robust, and I think they can withstand the passage of time quite easily. Given that you're careful with your phone, and given that you don't take it to a beach, for example, I think I think they can withstand minor day-to-day wear.
How long has your wife had her flip Samsung?
She's had it for a year now, and she's not a very careful user either. So I have not seen any. Apart from one dent, one very tiny dent on the hinge, I have not seen any damage with the inner screen. The built-in factory layer still looks pristine, and it works well. It's been over a year now, and she's very happy with it. So that goes to show that is a Flip 5, I think, and it's still they've done a good job in that department.
What percentage of time would you say she uses it open as opposed to closed on the outside screen? And, how many times do you think she opens it a day kind of thing? What sort of hammer is it getting?
Well, she uses it mostly open, so she doesn't like the cover screen very much, to be honest. She opens the hinge multiple times a day, so probably more than 10 times a day. So, and I did put some apps for her on the cover screen using the GoodLock module. And I did suggest to her that you can use a cover screen for your basic chatting apps or basic email checking, but she likes using the inner display more. So despite that, and with a toddler around, I think the phone's has kept its robustness up pretty well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that they've got better, and we can be more confident about buying them these days. Okay, where would you like to go next, Zane?
Well, I would like to talk about some interesting devices that have shown up in the past decade. You know, there was a time when manufacturers were trying to create this all bezel-less display phone back in, I think, 2017, 2018. And the Chinese manufacturers had just started showing up with their designs, and they were trying to enter the competition, basically. And we saw devices like the Find X. We saw some slider phones from Xiaomi and Honor. I remember the Mi Mix 3, which was a slider phone, had an all-screen display, and you could slide it to reveal the front-facing camera. It was an excellent design, very robust. And Honor did the same thing with the Magic V2, I think it was it, or the Magic 2 itself. So it was a very good, similar kind of design. And then the Find X had a motorized camera pop-up. It looked beautiful, had a 95% screen to body ratio around about, and it looked something from the future. And I miss those kind of attempts by manufacturers to create products that look more futuristic. And now we have all similar looking slabs with punch hole cameras or a dynamic island in the front. So I miss those days.
Yes, I think you're right. Do you remember that Honor, Joe?
No, but I remember the Oppo Find X with its. I remember that purple very vividly as well. It's I quite liked the look of it. I really did. And I'm with you there. I mean, there is obviously complications with having moving parts like that. But I do like the screen not being having anything on there at all. No notch, no holes at all. It's nice, and that's why I liked. That's why I went with Sony quite a lot, because I liked, even though you had a big forehead and chin, I kind of preferred having a nothing in front of my screen. Yeah, it's much better.
But yeah, there were some interesting shapes and sizes going on, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yes. Speaking of Sony, I forgot to mention this, guys, but I did own a Sony Xperia briefly as well. One of my friends, he was in Japan back in the day, and he promised me to he got me an Xperia 1 Mark III, I remember, and it was a used secondhand phone, and it was a carrier unlocked phone, Japan carrier unlocked phone, and it was magnificent. I loved the design. I loved the narrow tall aspect ratio. Contrary to the popular opinion, which was that 21:9 screens were not good, I thought they were perfectly fine. It allowed me to use the phone one-handed most of the time when I have something else in the hand, or maybe like a bag or a shopping bag. I did like that aspect ratio, the tall aspect ratio. And I still think that the Fold 8 Ultra and the previous Folds, I'm quite okay with the outer screen being tall and narrow. I do like the shorter Fold 8, not because of its outer screen aspect ratio. I like it because of its smaller size. But I do respect the tall and narrow aspect ratio. The only caveat is typing experience. But apart from that, I think when it comes to scrolling and using the phone, I think that was a good aspect ratio.
But that went away somewhere, did it?
Yes, unfortunately, yes, it went away. Now we are back to the standard. I think it's 20:9 now.
Yeah.
20.9. Yeah. So that's a shame that you lost that phone, because they are pretty much unique now, aren't they? 21:9 is going away. And you need to even now get an older Xiaomi Xperia to get one of those.
Yes.
But you're right. The Chinese phones are the ones that are pushing the boundaries, and they're the ones that have been over the last 10 years, particularly playing with, like you say, those like motorized selfie cameras popping up and what have you, and sliding, and right, the Moto Riser, which is an interesting beast as well. Who knows what's around the corner?
You got the robot phone as well from Honor.
Oh yeah, that's coming.
Very
along.
Interesting,
yeah.
One.
That's going to be launching soon, I think, this month itself. They say
in China. Yeah, yeah. Would you be interested in one of them, Zane?
I do love Honor's attempt at creating something different from everything looking like an iPhone. Now, this is something fresh out of them.
Yeah.
And I like Honor for what they stand, but I don't like their UI. It's too iOS inspired. Just like you told, I don't like very heavily iOS inspired Android skins. I think back in the day, they were not very iOS inspired. Even the Chinese had their own themes going on, but since the past 3 to 4 years, they've started to copy a lot of elements from iOS.
Yeah, I do agree. And I wish there was more uniqueness. But it's all about money, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we just have to suck it up. And if you don't like it, don't buy it. But there's always launches.
Yes.
Okay.
True.
So what have we got next in your little list here? Current tech news?
Yes, I think we pretty much covered that with the release of foldables. And I would like to mention Nothing as well, the Nothing phone company.
Oh yeah.
I've always liked their designs. They seem to be doing something different from the rest of the pack, and But the past couple of years, they've fallen short a bit. With the new Nothing Phone 4B, the launch seems very confusing. We were all promised hints of a smaller phone, and we were promised a lot of fan concepts and the ultimate phone, but we never got any of those. We got a very mid-of-the-pack, very low-end phone, not priced appropriately in this market particularly, and they seem to be losing their uniqueness. And I understand the dynamics and the economics of it, but it's a very confusing approach right now. I did like their Nothing Phone 3, which was very different from, and it was criticized heavily by the internet, but I really liked its unique design and the glyph interface. I love their OS as well. It's very minimalistic and it's got its own unique touch to it. But the hardware seems to be falling apart, I think, especially compared to something like an Honor phone or a Xiaomi or a Vivo or an Oppo.
I think they're running out of money, frankly. When you watch Carl Pei being interviewed now and again, and read between the lines, it feels like, you know, he's trying really, really hard to make it all happen and work. And the wise money now seems to be on Nothing diverging off into making things that are not phones, you know, audio devices and headphones and earphones. And there's talk of a watch now around the corner, and some Bud Loops, I think it is. He's already said that in this year they're not going to be releasing any flagships. But I agree with you, Zane. I think and I know that Joe agrees with us as well, because he reviewed the Nothing Phone 3. My only complaint about the Nothing Phone 3 was it was just so big. But apart from that, I am totally with you on everything you said there.
Yeah, me too.
I did love their CMF Phone 2 Pro. I still think it's one of the best budget phones out there in any market, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it looks very unique and looks very polished. And I wish they created a new version of it, but I think they've ditched the CMF Phone 3 plan. So this will do for now. And I hope they really get enough money or funds to make some cool phones they were making already.
Yeah, I'd be really sad to see them leave the market. I think, like you say, Ted, as long as they carry on doing audio stuff, there's a chance of them coming back, isn't there, really? depending how that does, I guess.
You'd hope so, yeah. And Carl Pei wants to make a small nothing poem. He said that, but he just does not think that it will sell, and so he's holding off. And I just hope it doesn't, the same as you, I hope it doesn't collapse around his ears. But there you go. So, yeah, that's nothing. Where should we go next?
Well, I would also like to mention a special mention. I would like to have a special mention for Techno and Infinix. Now, these two companies come under the umbrella of a Chinese manufacturer called Transient. So they basically target the African and the South Asian market, especially the Pakistani market, the Indian market as well. Now, these phones are basically undercutting the prices of already excellent Poco phones and Realme phones. And they have a similar kind of design to a flagship Realme or a Poco or a Vivo. But you get like incredible phones for 150 euros or something, or 100 euros. And you get probably a two-year-old spec phone, a flagship phone, with 2 years old processor or a probably like a slightly outdated display. But you get a very decent package. I've seen a lot of them being used by the common man in South Asia. And they perform just like, they perform very well in day-to-day usage. And they have huge batteries as well. Well over 5,000 mAh, and they come with bundled chargers, fast chargers, and they come with a lot of accessories as well. So kudos to these manufacturers for providing amazing smartphones at a bargain price for the common man in South Asia.
Wow, yeah, I'm just looking at the Techno Pova 8, and you're quite right. It's got a Dimensity 7100, which is perfectly good. 8,000 milliamp hour battery. And military standard protection and so forth, but no pricing, because basically after what you said there, Zane, they're not in the West, are they? So what sort of price would this kind of phone go for, do you think?
Well, they range from around about £100 to 250, £300. So within that category, you're basically getting a phone that's worth almost £500 to £600 from something like Samsung or Google. So right, they're basically the four. Let's take the 10A as an example, the Pixel 10A. They have better features than the Pixel A series, most of them, but they're almost half the price, and they even undercut some of their bigger Chinese siblings, like from like the Realme's and the Pocos.
Mm-hmm. So we would have to import these, basically, wouldn't we?
Yes.
Would you have to import them as well?
Here in Qatar, I can get my hands on them. There are some outlets that do sell them, but back in Pakistan, I saw them sell by a bucket load. And they do a perfectly fine job for, you know, for, and they've introduced more people to Android than anyone else, I would say. If you were to go buy a Samsung A series phone or a budget iPhone at that price, you would not find anything as decent as that.
Really interesting. Infinix and Techno. And we do, GSM Arena covers these devices. I do see them going through, but as soon as I realize that we can't get them, I kind of lose interest. But it's interesting that you've had a look and you've seen what they can do. And it does look as though they are very good devices for the price. And we say time and again on this show now, Joe, that what people need from a device. I was talking last week about using the Motorola Edge 60 Neo, which is not all singing, all dancing by any stretch, but it's perfectly good for 95% of users that are not nerds and geeks and want to push the boundaries all the time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. When I was using the Magic 8 Lite, that was perfectly fine. I could use it, and a nice big battery, a decent enough screen. Yeah, more than usable. Techno and Infinix are always on my radar, like you say, Ted, because we can't really get them. We don't talk about them too much, do we? That Pova 8 Pro looks like almost like a nothing inspired sort of copy, doesn't it? I like the accent, orange accent on the power button. Little details like that. Yeah, looks lovely. Really nice design.
Very good. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, Zane, what are we going on next?
Where are we going? Where are we going? Keep us rolling.
Okay, I also have to give a special mention to two phones. One is the Samsung Omnia HD and Samsung Innovate. Now, these both phones, Ted, if you remember, Joe, if you remember, that back in the Symbian days when Nokia were absolutely dominating all over the world with the likes of N95 and the N97s, and Samsung tried to compete with them, and they made Steve covered them in great detail with All About Symbian, and he mentioned, I mean, the Innovate was like an N95 competitor with a higher megapixel camera and more features and a bigger screen. I remember it. I think it was a 2.8 inch screen compared to a 2.6 on the N95. And also the Omnia HD came out much later and it was the first Symbian touchscreen phone with a capacitive display.
Yes, had one.
and it had multi-touch support.
Yeah, it was great. I do remember having this phone, and it was, you're absolutely right. It was after Apple had done the kind of capacitive screen, touchscreen stuff, it was just like, wow, this is coming to Android now.
Yes, it was the first phone with, I think, Symbian phone with an OLED touchscreen display, I remember. And it was also the first phone that could shoot 720p video, although it was not very crisp or very stable, but I'm glad they did something out of the box, and that led to it being standard for every phone back in the day.
It was gold edition. Phone. Gold edition looks very fancy. 24 karat gold edition. You seen that?
Yes. I just trust you with your bling.
Yeah.
but I do remember that, and I remember being wowed by it and thinking, yeah, if Symbian can do this, then they're basically doing what Apple have done, and let's get moving on Android with this. So very, very cool. And yeah, I did like it. And we talked about that device quite a lot between Steve and I at the time. Right, okay, we need to press on. Time is moving forward. You wanted to mention your Instagram account.
Yes, I do have a public Instagram handle. It's ZenShahid93. So I try to take aesthetic pictures with my S24 Ultra, sometimes with the iPhone, and I try to not make them look very digitally processed. And I mean, that's my social media contact as well.
Okay.
So I followed yesterday. Yep.
We'll put a link in the show notes to that so people can go and see what photographs you've been taking. You've actually got three apps in the app wrap. Do you want to quickly lead us through those?
Yes, I've got three apps. So the first is Blip. Blip is a cross-platform sharing app which allows you to share any file, anything between Android, iOS, Windows, Mac. The UI is elegant. It's a beautiful UI, very easy to set up. All you need is an email account, and you can send large files between your iPad or iPhone and your Android device, or even your Windows or Mac PC. So it works like a charm. There are lots of cross-platform sharing Wi-Fi direct apps, but this one has a very smooth and elegant UI, and it's uniform across the board. So that's my first recommendation.
Very good.
This one looks very good. I like the look of this.
Mm-hmm.
The second app I want to mention is Documents for iOS. Now, way before the Files app on iOS got matured, the Files app on iOS and iPad was very poor and lacked a lot of features, was very clunky to use. Documents for iOS is has been having those features which iOS has implemented now. So it's basically not only a document viewer, but it's also a browser. It also allows you to share files, and it can open up literally any file, whether it's a compressed file or a PDF or a PowerPoint. It's your all-in-one handling of documents or photos. It also allows you to edit documents for free. There is a small fee to pay, but the free version also allows you to do a lot of things. So it's highly recommended by me.
Very good. Okay.
And the third, and the app I use almost every day, and my favorite recommendation is Niagara Launcher. Now, if anyone's looking for an Android launcher, which is very minimalistic, yet highly customizable, I think this is the one to go for. Now, they've been around for quite a while, and it's a beautifully laid out launcher in an alphabetical order, like in a list order. But there are tons and tons of options. And the best part is that it's not RAM hungry or resource hungry. It sips through the battery life, and it's very, very beautiful to use and very fluid. No matter how limiting your phone's hardware can be, this launcher really does a good job of being minimalistic, aesthetically beautiful, and highly customizable.
It certainly has a good following, and many people use it and come back to it for absolute sure. So I haven't, I mean, I've downloaded it to just have a look and a play with it, but I've never used it in anger. And perhaps it's about time I did to have a deeper look. So cool. Niagara Launcher, documents for iOS, and Blip is our app wrap.
Good app wrapping there, I think.
Yeah, very definitely. Good. Yeah, absolutely. Some good stuff. We'll put links to all of those in the show notes. I've been back on Pixel this week. The Android 17 QPR 2 beta 1 arrived on my Pixel 9, and so it's all on Google again. Watch, tablet, phone, folding phone, straight phone. And it's just quite nice to get back to it, really, sometimes. Warts and all, I know, you know, we were talking about Samsung earlier and One UI, and it is great. It's absolutely great. But it's just sometimes nice, in my mind, to get back to the mothership and do things as intended, straight from Google and straight from Android itself. I have dabbled with the Pixel Fold again, as I say. I don't want to prefer the Fold 8, the forthcoming Fold 8, but actually I think I might be preferring it, which is a bit dangerous because it's so expensive. So at the moment I'm trying to steer away from folding devices and just sticking with my Pixel 9 in my pocket. But I'm also looking forward very much to the first Google book. I'll put a link in the show notes to an article that we covered in Tech Addicts, Gareth Miles and I, at the weekend. And it looks like the first of the Google books are coming out of Lenovo, not that far away. And I want to be in on that. If you want to get our thoughts on Google Books and that versus Chromebooks and that versus Chromebooks Plus and all the rest of it, then do tune in to Tech Addicts from Sunday and have a listen to our bit of a deep dive on it. So I've got renewed enthusiasm for that as well. My Fairphone 5 has eventually been, I just got an email today, it's eventually arrived in France after having bounced back. I sent it the first time to be repaired, and the customs bounced it back to me. And there was something wrong with the label on it or the ticket. It was just something really boring and trivial. And so I went back onto the Fairphone bods and I said, told them the story. And I said, what am I supposed to do? Just tell me step by step exactly what's it. Anyway. We did it again, and I took it in, and I got an email today to say they've got it. So hopefully they're going to repair it and send it back to me within a few days, because that's what they were suggesting that it was going to do. And it's going to cost me about 30 quid or something like that to get it fixed.
That's not too bad, is it?
They're putting it through their machine and basically putting it back to factory. When I put Lineage OS on it, I just broke something on it. I bricked it. I didn't brick it, but I broke it in some way. And so the layer that allows you to use the APIs for banking and payments is just never going to be there again. And apparently they've got this machine where they plug it in and it fixes all that. And so I thought, yeah, I had a word with Mike Warner and decided, yeah, just send it off and let them do it. So that's what we've done. So that's been my week largely. Anything interesting your week? You're still on the Razor Fold, Joe?
Yeah, I can't get off it. I love it. I have so much so that I've added another scratch on the screen, much to my delight. Yeah, I'm just collecting scratches on it now. I really should buy a screen protector on the front there. Because I don't like the cases. You know the front cases on foldable devices? I don't like them. They're not nice for swiping and stuff, so I might have to just go with a screen protector. But nothing else that exciting other than dabbling with the 600 Pro every now and again. I've been quite lazy today, so I didn't play with none of the phones actually, other than the Razor. The 600 Pro's got to go back soon, which I'm quite sad about. But hopefully I'll get the V6 in shortly after. It'll only be for a short period, I believe, but I'll try and keep hold of it as long as I can. As I say, the 600 Pro is already overdue, so I'm a bit naughty like that. But they're quite chilled out. They don't chase you. So
no, and it looks like Motorola are the same, because you've still got the Edge 70, haven't you?
I have indeed, yeah, because I haven't done anything with that, and other than talk about it on here, and because it, as I mentioned on here, it is actually a really lovely device. It's super lightweight. I can see it appealing to a lot of people, especially if you get it at the right price. But yeah, I've not really given it enough love really at all. I'm a terrible tech YouTuber.
I'm gonna tell Wilkin of you.
Yeah, no, I'm in the good books of him, because you know the World Cup tickets you got with the Razor Fold.
Yeah,
I allowed him to have them, so hopefully I've got some grace there.
You got some brownie points to fall back on. Right, okay. Before we wrap things up, let's go to photo of the week. And I've got a really interesting one. First of all, shout out to Ahmed Bibars, who is sadly not far off the centre of the earthquake that's going on in Egypt at the moment. So all our thoughts are with you, Ahmed. And it sounds like he's not directly affected, but he certainly got woken up and shaken out of bed during the night when that happened.
He said he felt it, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. So poor old chap. So we're thinking of you. And I thought that I would pick a photograph of yours to put into Photo of the Week, which you took some years ago on the Nokia Lumia 920, of your iris. And it's just a staggering photograph, really. You'll know the one I'm talking about, Ahmed. And it's just really, 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 really sillily close up of the eye. And so much so that you can, one of the comments in the group, Chris Kelly said, apart from the technical brilliance that this Nokia Lumia 920 can deliver, he was blown away to see that an iris is actually made up of a bunch of threads. And until you get that close to something like that, I mean, maybe it's more of a nature shot than an artistic one, but it's still really interesting, I think. He took this on the phone, slightly further away from its minimum focusing distance to allow more depth of field, then transferred via Bluetooth to the Galaxy A24. Then in Lightroom on the A24, he did some upscaling in Lightroom, and then cropped it. So he wanted to use the Lumia because he wanted to avoid Samsung's over-sharpening. So, not too shabby for a 14-year-old camera phone, he says. And he's right. It's just stunning, isn't it? You can see that, Joe. And it's almost unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, he always does these amazing images. I'm quite surprised that device has managed to do that, because I questioned it earlier to you, didn't I? I was like, has that phone really done that without an external lens on there or somewhere? Because it does feel really close to get them little threads and of the iris, yeah. But taking that aside, it's absolutely stunning.
Completely bonkers, and yeah. I'm really, really impressed. Any thoughts on that, Zane?
It does look very stunning. He's managed to capture the intricate details of the iris, the structural cells of the epithelial layer of the iris, which is very impressive for a budget mid-range phone, and that to an old phone.
Yeah, yeah. So well done to Ahmed. And you won't find that in recent postings in the MeWe group, because it was a 3 or 4 months back that he did that, but I never got round to highlighting it properly. But yeah, well done, Ahmed, and wishing you all the best, and hope you don't get any of these aftershocks in Cairo where you are. So Zane, you picked a photograph out as well, didn't you?
Yes, I did like the one taken by Owen at the North Beach 10B. He used his Oppo Find X9 Ultra's 10X to get that shot, which looks like a professional DSLR-esque shot. Looks absolutely brilliant for a 10X shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're looking at a beach, through some rocks, an opening in some rocks, lots of people playing in the water, lots of sand, and then across the other side of the bay, there is a rock face and trees going up very sharply to a house at the top, which has got some scaffolding around it, and blue sky above. So that's generally the shot. Joe?
Yeah, I was going to pick this one as well. It's like so much depth to it, with the rock in front of you. Then you've got a little rock in the build up on the beach, and then there's a mountain almost in the background in the house. And yeah, there's so much build up. It's a very interesting image. It's a good, really good quality. I looked at the Google Photos version of it, and you can really can zoom in quite far, even though it's already a 10x shot. And see some good detail there. So it is impressive.
But the natural framing makes it, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Looking through this kind of jagged rock through a kind of natural window, I think if you didn't have that at the front, it could well easily be just a kind of boring beach photo to some degree.
And even to the point, you see where the sea comes in and that jagged rock goes in as well with it. Just really nicely, fluidly done in there. I don't know if that was done on purpose or by luck, but either way, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it looks like an opening scene of a movie or something. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A killer.
Yeah, so good pick. Thank you, Zane and Joe. You both picked it. Yeah. We're about done. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show. And in 2 weeks' time, we shall be entertaining Jim Fowle again. And hopefully he'll tell us all about his, what's it called? I can't remember what it's called now.
Side
phone, that's it. Yeah. The side phone. And also some other stuff that he's been dabbling with as well. We usually get a good flow of stuff with him. So that's in 2 weeks' time, and we'll be back then. Thank you so much, Zane, for coming on. It's been great to talk to you and to find out all about what you're doing and what devices you're using. I hope you'll come back on sometime in the not-too-distant future, perhaps when you've got your hands on Z Fold 8.
Yes, it was an honor to be on the show. As I've mentioned, I'm a huge fan of you guys. Been following since day one, and I'll always keep following.
That's very kind of you. And we're very pleased that we please some people. PhoneShowChat.UK is our website. Don't forget there's two S's in the middle if you are going to follow that. If you want to buy me a coffee, it's at paypal.me/TedSalmon. And if you want to buy Joe a coffee, it's at paypal.me/Hickey85. PodHub UK is where you'll find links to everything we do. And at TedSalmon.com, you'll find the same, but more, with links to all of our MeWe groups, all of our audio podcasts, and all the fun of the fair. So do get across there. And yes, we'll catch you in 2 weeks' time, and we'll be there with Jim on show 905. Thanks for listening, everyone, and catch you soon.